Afternoon.
Hey.
Lucky Llama closes at 2:30, so we went to Starbucks instead.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Hi, everyone.
Natalia.
Hi, Natalia.
Hi, Al.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
You left so fast yesterday. We took a photo to commemorate my time in the seat.
I had to have a bathroom break.
Yeah.
Chris, will anybody else be joining you today?
No, I think you just have me.
Okay, well, that's fine. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, if there's no one else, should we get started?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Al, would you like to lead the meeting or would you like me to?
I'd like you to. You do such a good job of it.
Okay, well, welcome everyone to the District Elections Committee. It's 3 p.m. on Tuesday afternoon. Why don't we go ahead and start with the roll call?
All right. Councilmember Alarcon.
Here.
And Vice Mayor Clark.
Here.
Great. And Brian, would you like to provide the information regarding our meeting?
Sure, the meeting protocols. So this meeting will be conducted pursuant to the provisions of the Governor's Executive Orders N-29-20 and N-33-20 and Santa Barbara County Health Officers Orders in response to the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The committee members, staff, and any presenters will be participating by video conference using the Zoom platform. The public can view the meeting live, and instructions to view the meeting are included in the posted agenda. The public can also participate in the following ways: submitting a comment via the e-comment link on the city's agenda website for this meeting to be distributed to committee members or read, or sorry, not read into the record. We're not no longer doing that. And then also the public can provide real-time public comment through the Zoom meeting by using the raise your hand feature to notify staff that they would like to make a public comment during the designated public comment times. And that concludes my remarks.
Right. So let's move on to item number 2, which is public comment. So this is the opportunity for public comment to occur on matters not otherwise on the agenda, but within the subject matter of the District Elections Committee. So if you have a public comment, please raise your hand.
So Councilmember Alarcon, I do not see any raised hands at this time.
Okay, thank you. So agenda item number 3, which would be the approval of meeting minutes as of June 8th, 2021. Would you like to make a motion, Al?
Yeah, I moved to approve the minutes.
Great, and I will second. And let's jump into item number 4, which is to discuss and recommend the option for 4 districts with an at-large elected mayor or 5 districts.
Thanks, Natalia. I think I'll start off, and a couple of things I want to note before we get started on the 3 business items on the agenda. One is just clarification on what Brian said about the meetings and reading comments into the record. We employed the practice of reading comments into the record, written comments into the record, because with all virtual meetings, no in-person testimony possible, it was an opportunity to provide a voice for people that might otherwise not be able to participate virtually through a platform like this one. And so just to clarify, I think as we go forward, my intent is to have us continue to do that for any meetings that are entirely virtual. What Brian was making reference to is we go back to in-person meetings, as we have with the city council, that will drop the reading of comments into the record, because of course people have the opportunity to attend in person. So just a clarification there. So for these meetings, if we had received public comment and the public commenter had timely requested it be written in the record, we could certainly accommodate that. And then the second thing I wanted to mention is I want to introduce Olivia Uribe Mutal, who's our program manager. Welcome, Olivia. And she's going to be helping us out a little bit on this work. So I know the council members know her, but Chris, I want to introduce you to you and any members of the public that may not know Olivia yet.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be here, and I'm excited for this work.
Thanks. So the 3 questions that are a part of the committee's agenda today are intended to provide for you making recommendations to the city council for their for an upcoming meeting. So before, as we discussed at the last meeting, before we get into the mapping process with the community in earnest, the council needs to make a few decisions. So one of those decisions is, you know, what four districts or five. And, you know, that comes out of the California Voting Rights Act and our settlement agreement. One of the memos that was prepared, and also I can screen share those if you like, by redistricting partners for us, you know, mentions that, you know, some of these things are influenced by our the settlement agreement. And when they wrote the memo, they didn't have to have that at their fingertips. But our settlement agreement does give those two options specifically, four districts or five with an at-large, four with an at-large mayor, sorry, or five council districts. So that's it's particular specific to those two options. So a recommendation from your committee, and Chris is here to go through each of these memos when we get to that. So I'll hand it off to him in a moment. The second question is then, you know, numbering of the districts. So that effectively is ordering the districts as they will come up in elections. And the next election we have is November 22. There'll be three seats up, and the council will have an opportunity to determine which of the seats are up. They'll order 1, 2, 3 that will go first, in other words. And Chris will talk about that, some of the factors that you all can consider. Clearly on these things, the council has the discretion. So this is just a recommendation from your committee on, you know, what should be considered or what you recommend the council do, whatever is appropriate for each agenda item. And then lastly, is a discussion of the tools available and those being recommended through our partnership with redistricting partners and what we'll make available to the public. So with that, unless there's questions on the three matters before you, I'll turn it over to Chris and he can kind of walk through the memo. And let me know, council members, if you'd like me to screen share, or I don't know if Chris, if you were planning on doing that, but I can screen share the memos if you like.
I can screen share them too. They're right in front of me.
Okay, great.
Let me just close two things real quick. Here we go. Just so I think, are you seeing a memo titled Ad Hoc District Elections Committee Members?
Yes.
Okay. So the first one, I think Dave outlined already, is the number of districts. So you really have, because of the settlement option or the settlement, you can really go in two different directions, right? You could do four districts with an at-large mayor or five districts with a rotating mayor between those five city council members. I think the biggest issue you'll have is that, well, there's two major issues. One is, of course, if you go with four districts, each of those districts are going to be slightly larger. And from we've looked at the estimated population of Carpinteria. And so with a four district structure, you'll have districts around 3,400 people. And a five city council structure, you'll have districts with 2,700 people. So it's just the size of the districts matter. And then I think the other issue that is before you is that there's an opportunity, if you go with a five city council structure, to create two stronger Latino influence districts. You can't get to 50, you can't get to 50 plus one under the CVRA or under CVAP data that we're looking at this point. But you can get one district to 48% and one district to 41% with a five district structure. So I think those are the two kind of competing interests with this decision. And I think, as the memo also describes, is that one issue that some residents may have is that right now they get to vote for every city council member. And when you go to a districted system, of course, they're only allowed to vote for one and every other election. But if you have an at-large mayor, then everyone would basically have the opportunity to vote for that, the at-large mayor and their city council member. So they get to vote for like two representatives on the city council. I think those are kind of the major factors before you on this decision. And because of the settlement, it being agnostic to which pathway you choose, I think you can go in either direction. It's really dependent on how you want to structure the structure the process going forward. And I'm here for questions, of course, if you want to delve more into the details of the memo.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Al, do you have any questions for Chris at the moment?
Not at the moment, thank you.
Okay. Chris, I have a couple of questions for clarification, if that's all right, Councilmember Alicone. Yes. They're kind of logistical questions. In your experience working with other agencies that have already implemented district elections or had districts before of around the size of districts that we're talking about, is a smaller district of this size, are there greater challenges in finding candidates, and would that be something that ought to be a part of the consideration of the committee here, the difference between 3,400 and 2,700 factoring into the likelihood of not getting candidates out of districts, and the likelihood of a greater number of tie votes in election, given the smaller pool of voters, that we would be having runoffs more frequently as a factor to be, again, considered by the committee in terms of logistics.
So I'll answer the second question first. I don't think I've seen a lot of ties, even in really tiny districts where, maybe you have 1,000 people. Usually that doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it makes national news. So it doesn't happen very much nationally. but on the first question about the number of candidates, I think that is a core question that you guys should think through. Do you think if we split the city into five districts, do you think you would have a good candidate pool from each of those five districts? Or is it a better option to have, only four districts that come up? So that, I think that is a question that you should think through when you're making the decision. But the ties usually don't come up very often. And I think the other thing too to think through is you're all currently city council members. So if you go with a four district model with an at-large mayor, two of you are like automatically getting drawn into a city council seat together. And it'll, for the next question, that could, have implications, but that kind of forces somebody to run for mayor if everyone wants to keep running for office. If you move into a five council districts, then you could all have a seat. We don't know where you all live. So we're not going to draw districts based on that by your addresses, but there's a higher probability that you each would have a district to run in.
I have another question, and I don't know if it's been addressed at all, but it has to do with voter turnout and whether or not those numbers have been included and are kind of part of the consideration in the districts.
So we to rebalance district or to draw new district lines, we only rely on the census. So we don't look to voter registration in balancing the four districts or the five districts. But it can come in if there's a federal voting rights issue or other things. We can look at voter data to kind of help guide us in our Section 2 analysis. But one of the things that we've pointed out in this memo is that in either scenario, we can't get to that super, the majority minority ability. So we don't really think Section 2 applies. So we don't really have to get into the election data.
Thank you.
Sure.
Chris, can you just clarify again? I believe you just mentioned it, the minority majority. You mentioned something about the 48% and then 41% depending on the districts. Can you clarify?
Yeah. So if you look here, let me reshare the memo. Sorry. If you look at page 2, you can see basically we've done an analysis, and what it shows is that under a five district structure, we could draw one seat on the eastern side, or on the western side, excuse me, that's 48% CVAP, and one that's 41%, kind of sort on the eastern side. But under a four district structure, those percentages drop to 45% and 36%. So you basically, one gets really close to a majority minority, but doesn't hit the mark. But you'd still have two, in either scenario, you'd have a pretty good Latino, what we would call it a Latino influence district.
Okay, thank you.
Districts.
My other question, in terms of the four districts and one at large, is this an appropriate question to talk about in terms of term limits for the mayor? Would it still be 4 years? Is that something that the council would have to decide?
I think you would use your same structure for elections. There is some wiggle room with CVRA conversions that you guys are going through. But I do not think that you can, I don't know about term limits. That would be a question for council. We've never really discussed that during a CVRA. Usually just the big question of, do you have an at-large mayor election with four, you know, council districts, or do you do just the five council districts?
Oh, in your experience, Chris, you've never seen a city that's gone from what we have, four-year terms, to something else, adding a maximum amount of time for a mayor, or having
term
limit applied.
Before CVRA, the couple cities in the Sacramento region actually went to, like, district elections, but their mayors are on 2-year terms, mm-hmm. which the mayors hate in those cities now. But 20 years ago, that was kind of a thing that they did. I think keeping the 4-year structure for mayor and city council makes a lot of sense. And, you know, setting up that rotation for elections so that, you know, you're constantly moving from 3 to 2. Like you would now. So I guess under your system, you would have, if you went with four, you would probably have the mayoral election and two city council elections in November of 22, and then the other two city council elections in 24. But term limits usually don't, they haven't come up, let me just say that, they haven't come up when our redistricting processes. So that would be something I think you'd want to ask council.
Okay, well, if the council members, after they deliberate, have interest in us pursuing that, we can investigate that for you if you like.
I'm sorry, I lost my connection. What was that a question that you were answering, Dave?
I think when we get after public comment, when we get back to deliberations, if your council members wish for us to get an answer to the question of if through the CBRA in our settlement agreement process for converting to district elections, if there's if that opens up an opportunity to set term limits as a part of that, mm. not mm-hmm. we can ask the question of council if you're interested in that and be prepared. I'm hoping we can, you know, be in front of the council, you know, at our next meeting, as we've mentioned. So if it's okay, what we would pose for kind of outstanding legal questions like that, as long as it doesn't influence your recommendation, is that we bring that information back to the full council.
I would agree. Do we have any other questions of Chris before we do public comment? Okay. If you have a public comment, please go ahead and raise your hand.
So, council member, we do have one public comment so far from, says Silver Sands Village. So I'll go ahead and allow them to talk.
Fred.
All right. You're available to talk right now, Silver Sands Village.
Hi, okay. It's Lisa and Fred.
It's Lisa and Fred, Fred Shaw. And this is a question for Chris. Normally, anytime you run the way it's currently at large, it costs a certain amount of money to run. When you go to districts, that's obviously going to lessen that amount of money it costs to run because you're running for one district. My question is, in your experience, if we went to four rather than five districts with an elected mayor, does that position of mayor, have you seen the cost of running for that compared to all the other districts go way up? Because if it does, then I think that works against the idea of being inclusive in the community, because it would take a lot of people out of the mix if it was much more expensive.
So basically the way when you go to districts, the cost, if you run in a four or five district structure, would come down considerably. Either it would quarter or go down to a fifth, based on, you know, underlying costs. But for mayor, it would be priced at the higher cost that it is now because you're running at large. So that would be a cost difference. I have seen though where cities restructure their fees. Sometimes they waive them, sometimes they push, they reduce them down to another level. Sometimes cities and counties also will allow for candidates to, they have the in lieu option, right, where you can gather signatures to reduce your filing fee. So there's a lot of different ways that cities and counties can structure the filing fees, the candidate filing fees, to accommodate different options.
Thank you, Chris. And I think Lisa has a question as well.
I do. So I just wanted to clarify something that you said about having the five districts. The mayor then would be chosen from among them and they currently have a two-year term. Were you saying that that would change to 4 years or?
No, I was talking about that. If you went to an at-large mayor election,
okay,
that I would recommend a four-year term for the mayor.
Right. Okay.
But if you stayed in a five district city council, then you would continue with your rotation, however you do it now.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you very much for that.
Of course. So
I got a question. I think so far I'm in favor of five districts, but I'm wondering if you have five districts and then do it like we do now, you know, we have five city council members and they elect a mayor at large, or no, not at large, but, you know, from that pool of the five city council members, because that mayor gets elected from a specific district and that person becomes mayor, does that give that district undue power over other districts? Our district is a mayor and we can, right, you know, we can influence it, but throw the weight and do all the decisions in favor of our district.
I think that's less of a legal question and it's more of the way the culture of the council runs, because at the end of the day, you still have one, like, you know, if you're one of five, you still have just one vote. If you're the titled mayor or the titled city council person. So I don't think it functionally or legally changes the power structure or the power dynamic. But, you know, I think it kind of depends on who you guys elect as your, you know, mayor in this scenario, and how they behave and act and how the rest of the council acts in the relationship you build as a council. I know that's kind of punting the question, but I think fundamentally it doesn't create a more powerful mayor or more influential district.
Just as a reminder to dovetail off of Chris's comments, in our system now, pursuant our municipal code, Carpinteria Municipal Code, the mayor has very few specified, you know, powers. They're the chair of the meeting, so there's some authority around that. And our practices provide that the mayor has some roles in working with the city manager on putting together the agenda, getting things on the agenda, and of course, ceremonial roles out in the community, and do things like mayoral proclamations and whatnot that the mayor can do unilaterally. But other than that, as Chris pointed out, it's a equally weighted council member when it comes to votes. They don't have any additional vote. They don't have any administrative function in the organization. They're just like other council members.
I realize all that, but the mayor can put an item on the agenda all by himself, whereas otherwise it takes two city council members to put an item on the agenda. So a mayor might have undue or a district might have undue influence if their representative gets to put whatever they want on the agenda.
Yeah, that's
again, I don't, you know, I think I'm still in favor of five districts and the city council members select the mayor from that. But I'm just kind of raising this question to get all the, you know, info out.
And that's, you're absolutely right, Al, in terms of the way that our practice in handling agenda matters, the role of the mayor. And, you know, that's something that is a matter of practice. So if it became a problem in the scenario that you're describing, the council could always address it by adopting formal procedures for placement of matters on the agenda.
Okay. Any other discussion? I think I too would be in favor of five districts. And it sounds like what we need to do is determine what we would recommend, and then we would provide that to council. Would we also, of course, provide council with a summary? I mean, the pros and cons of both.
I think that makes sense. If you guys agree, we can do it that way, yes.
I'm in favor of five districts because it gives the minority population a better chance of getting representation, which they should have. You know, secondarily, I think that this will be a big change for the voters, and I think it would be less of a change if it kind of looks the same way. You know, you have five people that you elect, and they pick the mayor, and so that's less of a transition for the people. You know, otherwise, and I'm not concerned that the district sizes is smaller. I mean, you know, I think we'll still have candidates. And sometimes in our regular elections, we've had no people run against the city council members. I mean, that just happens. And you know, whoever's a candidate, the sole candidate, then is automatically gets a seat. But, you know, I don't think that's that big of a deal. But I think there will be a lot of people that will want to run.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, no, I think I do. I'm in favor of five districts. I think the current process that we have in place, the council with the rotating mayor, seems to work really well within the community. And so I think that's something that I would want to keep in place.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have to have a motion for this, Dave?
Yes, or, please.
Okay.
So moved.
I'll second. Is that enough clarification?
And if you could just vote. No, it seems silly, but if you could call for the vote.
Oh, okay. Roll call vote.
Or voice vote's fine.
Voice. Oh, okay. Voice vote, aye.
Aye.
Great. Thank you both.
Okay. So item number five, which is discuss and recommend a process for city council to determine which three districts will be part of the November 2022 election.
So this is key term here is process. So we're not, the council won't make this decision until obviously after the districts are set up. You may or may not choose to recommend a particular process for them to use or things that they should consider in making that decision. So there's an opportunity for you to make those kinds of recommendations to the council. And there's in the memo that Chris can go through now, there are some examples.
Yeah, so I think the most important kind of criteria that we can cull from the California Voting Rights Act is on district ordering is found in Elections Code Section 10,010, Section B. And it basically specifies that the governing body shall give special consideration to the purposes of the California Voting Rights Act of 2001, and it shall take into account the preferences expressed by the members of the districts. So I think the way you can think this one through is the basic spirit and purpose of the California Voting Rights Act is to ensure fair representation, especially of minority populations in California. So the first part of that section really talks to then putting the more Latino or minority districts in presidential years with where there's higher turnout so that they have more effective ability to elect their candidates of choice and put the less diverse districts in the gubernatorial elections because those have lower turnouts. And then the second part as well speaks a little bit to also looking to past elections and who's currently in office and trying not to disenfranchise people based on the districts. So I think in general, I think maybe making a recommendation to follow the elections code is the simplest. And then once we start introducing district lines, we can talk through their demographic numbers that can help lead the discussion on following this elections code section 10,010B. And maybe you also include its section A as well, where it discusses, and this is something you already do, is having staggering terms of the district lines or of the districts.
Chris, can you talk more about that, the staggering terms of what you mentioned?
Basically, it's just how you have it now, right? Where at the beginning of the meeting, right, there are three districts or three council members up for re-election in November of 22, and then there are two council members up in November of 24. So that's the staggering of districts or staggering of elections. Now you're just introducing districts and saying districts 1, 3, and 5 will be up in 22 and districts 2 and 4 will be up in 24. And it's just ordering the elections based on district numbers. And that normally is done in your last hearing. After you've kind of gone through at least two map hearings where we discussed different draft plans, we move lines around, we have community input. That's two meetings, usually two map meetings. And then on the fifth council meeting, you'll approve a plan that's been in print for 7 days, and then you'll decide on the ordering. The last thing usually councils do is they decide on the ordering of the final map they passed. So it's usually a two vote two motion action. One is passing the plan with 1 through 5 districts, and the second vote is then ordering those district elections based in 22 or 24. Or I think it's often gubernatorial and presidential general elections.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Chris?
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
Chris, would it be, if I'm understanding how this all works, would it be simpler and cheaper and, you know, more obvious to have the three terms start in 2022, because those are the people that are going to be up for re-election. Those are the districts or the people that are going to be up for re-election. I don't know. I'd just like to hear more about that.
So I think it would probably make the most sense to have, because you have three people that are termed out, right, and that could run for reelect, that we'd have three districts up in 22 and two districts up in 24. And I think that could, I don't know if you, I think you could make that a recommendation, or you could just say you're going to follow the elections code and discuss it once the maps are introduced. Because I think sometimes having some flexibility is good, especially when you're creating your first set of district lines. But I think I'm agnostic, because I think that's probably what you'll end up doing, right? Is having three up in 22 and two up in 24. Yeah. But you also don't have to make that decision today. You could make that decision, closer to the end.
So the whole city council doesn't have to decide this right away.
No, I think it's just talking through, like, making a recommendation on criteria for making that decision. And yeah. I think your recommendation could just be to follow this elections code section and discuss the ordering once a final map is, close to being approved.
Right.
Could be as simple as that.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Any other questions? Okay, if we don't have any other questions, let's go to public comment.
So I do not see any raised hands at this time.
Okay, and so let's jump into discussion. Any other final discussions? Or we can have a motion thrown out there.
Well, I'll move to, do what Chris suggests and wait until the map boundaries are drawn to, mm-hmm. Determine this question. And we can keep it at that for now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important that I don't think the council needs to make the decision right now. And I liked how Chris mentioned that there'd be more flexibility. So keep it simple.
Just to clarify, Chris's suggestion included when the matter does come before council that they use the applicable elections code sections as their guide for determining order. Is that a part of your motion?
Right. So now, what's our timetable for when that's going to happen?
Yeah,
in other words, that when's that discussion going to happen?
Yeah,
month of what year?
Yeah, do you have the schedule at your fingertips, Chris? Otherwise, I can open it up.
I was just going to pull it up.
Thanks.
So, I mean, I think, I think you'd probably maybe want to discuss it in February of 22. That's when your fourth hearing is. And when you're kind of finalizing district lines, and then in March of 2022, that's your final hearing. So that's really when you're going to have to make the decision on the ordering. I think probably having a public discussion in February to help guide your decision in March might work. You could also just have the March, have the discussion in March when you're finalizing the district order. Or the election order of the districts, excuse me.
Yeah, so that's fine. That gives potential candidates plenty of time to make their decision and their plans and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Is that enough information, Dave? Does that clarify?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so let's move on to agenda item number 6, which is to discuss and recommend which mapping tools will be made available to the public.
All right, I think I'll just turn it over to Chris to kind of walk through those tools and make sure that you're comfortable with the tools that are out there that redistricting partners is recommending we use in our case.
Yeah, so there's two public, there's numerous public mapping options out there. The two that we're using with most of our clients are either Maptitude Online redistricting, which is a very robust, very complicated, very sophisticated program that takes a lot of time to understand and use. Just as an example, the city of Santa Ana chose to use more. It cost them $95,000, I believe, to implement, and one person submitted a map. It's what I use when I draw lines, but I've been using Maptitude for over a decade now. So it's something that I don't think is necessary, the complexity. The other program though that I really love and I think is what I call the kind of the ideal mapping tool is Districter. It was developed by Tufts University. Its primary focus is on collecting community of interest maps, which Maptitude doesn't really have a good system to do. Maptitude, you really build district lines, but Districter was built on this idea that we want the public to submit their neighborhood or the area that they touch the most and they want to ensure is in a district. It's very simple. I always say I can teach my mom to draw districts in Districter in about 10 minutes, and she would be off and running in the city of Modesto. So what's great about it is we can load the data points that we'll use in our redistricting. And it's really simple to use. And it's also from the city standpoint, instead of having to host it on your website, host it on a hosting site or whatever, it's just a link on your website. Tufts hosts it and it makes the drawing really easy, but also the city functionality very simple as well. And it's about a tenth the cost of Maptitude.
Chris, would you be able to show us a demo of what to look like?
I can, let's see, we go here. Let's see. Let me stop sharing and let me see if I can pull up Maptitude real quick. So let's see, share screen. Okay. So I've already with Maptitude you have to log in. So I've already created an account and it's basically you just put a name and a email address in. And so I'm gonna get into the program. And so this is in the city of Long Beach. And so once you get into the system, basically you have different options to draw. So you can click on the options toggle, you can increase the label size so it can be read. You can also toggle through different themes that we've created. So here's a Latinx CVAP. You can also toggle through different layers. So right now you've got freeways, railroads, streets, and census block groups identified. I can turn on neighborhoods, which is pretty cool. And then there's also a district information along the bottom that once you start building out district lines, this will start telling you how far off a deviation you are to the ideal. This is based on 2015-2019 ACS populations. Then you can go up to the top to the toolbar section and start drawing a district. So if I want to draw a new district, I'm going to do unassigned, and I'm going to draw based on census blocks. And so I can use the circle tool to select an area. So yeah, that's the district I want to draw. And it will, it's supposed to include, I guess those are islands outside the city. But so this would be the district I just drew, and it would have population and has like all the different kind of data points that we've added in. So CVAP and ACS and estimated populations. And I could hit like check and give it a name and be done. I think the hard part with Maptitude is that all of it is based on submitting a balanced district plan. So all the tools and reports up here are focused on that. To make it into a community of interest tool, like you want to submit, this is my neighborhood, I want to make it, make sure it's in a district. You kind of have to use it in a different way, I guess. Once I was done, I could also email my plan to the city. I can share it or I can submit it directly. So that's Maptitude. I think the other issue with Maptitude is sometimes it's a little bit slow. I think I may have broken it by, maybe not. I may just need to cancel this. So there's a couple glitches, I think, with Maptitude, but then for Districter, it's really based on a different system altogether. It's an open source system. So this is the free Districter version for California. And you can see you have different options. You can draw districts. So I could go in and draw 52 congressional district plan in California, or I could draw my community. And right now, let's go to Napa. So I just clicked on draw my community of interest. I selected the city of Napa. And now basically have these tools up here. So a pointer where, or a hand where I can move it around, and maybe I want to go into downtown, and a paintbrush to paint my, my community. So let's say I want to make sure my paintbrush is only drawing at the 5 census block, region, and I'm going to draw, just downtown Napa and use the this major street and the water and the river as my kind of guide. I just toggle over it. I'm gonna do that one too. And I'm done. So the other thing I can do is I can go check to see kind of what information is there. So I can show what the underlying race in population. Let's see. Here we go. So I can actually use it as a guide when I'm drawing a district line. So I didn't, but you can. You can also go over to evaluation, and this has the population. So the total population of the green area is 4,800 people. Mostly white, they're actually almost split even, or wait, I'm sorry. This, yeah, 48% white, 47% Hispanic by population. And then you can also see it by citizen voting age population, which is, it's 54% white, 49.9% Latino or Hispanic with this data set. And then, you know, I can use the eraser or I can also use the zoom. But then what's great about this is I can hit save. I would tag it so that it would be shared and give it a name. And in your system, the other thing that would come up is you could provide a description of your community so that what happens is once I hit save and I share it, I hit tag my map, it would appear on the Districter page for Carpinteria along with every other community of interest map submitted. And as a member of the public, I could go in and look at every single plan submitted and say, you know, I really like the plan that Chris submitted, but it needs to include Memorial Stadium. It needs to go farther north. So I'm going to draw my own version and submit that as my plan. So that I think it's a little bit simpler to use, and but it also allows for, I think, the right level of detail as the public is drawing.
Thank you, Chris. Al, do you have some question? Do you have questions for Chris?
No.
Okay. Chris, I do have a question. In terms of additional mapping tools, I see we only have those two systems, but I know we talked about paper maps. Is that something
that would also- So that would be included
without
a charge. So we will be basically making you guys what we call placemats, but it's basically a map of Carpinteria, and we'll have like a streets version and then a neighborhood version. So it's double-sided with a little description of like what the community should do and an ability for them on the map to fill out like their name, the name for their community and a brief description. And then little instructions on, if you want to take this map and mail it to this address, or in the alternative, you can take a picture of the map and submit it to, you know, Carpinteria. And then what Redistricting Partners will do with all of those maps submitted is we'll convert them into GIS files so that you can see them when you get into the districting process. And all of the community of interest maps that are submitted, either through Districter or Maptitude or, you know, on a paper napkin, will be treated in a similar way and projected so you guys can see, you know, there are 105 community of interest maps submitted and this is what they look like, right? And we'll figure out a way so you guys can visually see it so that it can help guide you when we're talking about district lines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, so Chris, a question on the paper maps, would you want to share with everybody some sort of map of Carpinteria that had the demographics on it somehow to help them out?
Well, usually we don't. We just, like, this is a City of Davis map, a placemat. I don't know if you can see it, but it's basically colored by neighborhood with populations in there because they were going to use these to draw district lines. And so for Carpinteria, what we do is we do the same kind of coloring system for neighborhoods, but we wouldn't have any numbers in there. So people could say, I want, this is my neighborhood, or maybe they don't agree with our neighborhood lines and they want to expand out their neighborhood, or they think it should be these three neighborhoods should be in a district, or they could flip it over. And I don't have a good example of this, or they could flip it over and say, these are the streets boundary that I want to see as my community of interest. It has nothing to do with neighborhoods. It's this area, you know, we've seen. Yeah. So there's a lot of options.
Okay. Chris, in terms of options available to get the people to fill out the either, I guess, the online stuff or the placemat versions and get it into us, I think at one meeting we talked about, you know, people can, I don't know, request that it be mailed to them. They can come pick it up at City Hall. Maybe we'll have workshops where people can fill them out at the workshop or get copies. Is it all of the above? How do you guys usually work it when we get into that part of the process?
So, I mean, usually with the placemats, it's ideal, I think, if you have in-person options where, you know, like in the City of Napa, in the City of Davis, people had public mapping up like workshops. Where people came down, this was more once after census data was used, we handed out calculators, we put the ideal populations on their placemats, and then they drew. And sometimes they, you know, four or five people got together and drew a map. And then at the end of the day, staff from Davis or Napa would take pictures of those and send them to us. And then, you know, the next day we split up the photos and drew all the maps in Maptitude. so that we could, you know, submit them and have the council see the options. So that's how we love to go through the placemat options. And that could be something we, you know, if you want to use the placemats to draw districts, maybe that's something we schedule in January and February of next year. If it's more about community of interest maps, then you could have like pop-ups, you know, soon in the fall, where you're passing these placemats out and people either take them home with them, take a photo and submit, or you could put these up online. People could print them out at home and mail them in. I think what you said, all those are optional or options. It's really what you guys want to do with the physical maps. And then of course, with the online maps, right? It's really, if anyone who has access to the internet can log in and submit something, either a COI map or a full district map.
Go ahead, Al.
Thanks. So I won't call it an opportunity, I'll call it a chance. Is there a chance that a lot of people could submit maps and even the city council decide on a map that's outside the boundaries of the legal decision that started all this?
I mean,
you know, how do we make sure that's all okay?
So I think what we've always found, and actually this is how we drew both CVRA conversions in Napa and Davis, is we had public mapping options available. Napa used Districter and had maps submitted that way, and then on placemats. And basically what we found was there were four or five kind of structures in Napa and four or five in Davis. And so we provided those options to the city councils and that were balanced, that met all the requirements under, you know, equal population. They were all contiguous. They looked at community of interest. They were all legal. And some of the public maps we got were like, you know, the deviations were too great. But you could see kind of the theme or the structure they wanted. So we would try to basically correct the public map to make it in the spirit of the public map, but legally compliant. So I think that's the other thing, right? Like, we will draw all these maps that are submitted as the public did. And then when we come forward with draft maps in January, they'll all be compliant. So you could pass any of those maps down the road and they would pass legal muster. But what we'll usually do with those, each district map, is say, this one is based on, you know, these four or five map submissions from someone's, you know, from these folks, or if we're going to number the maps, or however we're going to do it, right? So that you guys can know that these are really publicly drafted maps that we've just kind of slightly altered for legal compliance.
Okay.
I think I would be in favor of the District R. It seems the most simple. I like the fact that you don't need to have a login or an email. I also like that it keeps record of the previous maps that were drawn then, and of course the paper map option as well. And then the education component, I think you mentioned an education component too. I think it's important for us to be able to share with the community, the parameters, or, you know, how to create a map that is legal and that would work. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think you're on the right track, okay. But you're totally right. Totally there. So I think with the community of interest placemats, it's really simple. We have a simple description on, you know, please draw your community of interest this in like answering these three questions, and like provide a short, you know, description of what your community is. And then on the district maps, because Carpinteria, you don't have to worry about Section 2 compliance. You don't really need to draw district lines solely focused on demographics. You can really do it more on your knowledge of the city. And we can help if we need to, right? Correct some of the issues with the public maps. But Davis and Napa, they both were basically, they were based on kind of the underlying neighborhood structure that already existed. It was fine. So I think sometimes we overthink districting, and I think it's probably because we get such into the weeds. But I think at the end of the day, it's really about structuring the district lines to work with the way your city kind of interacts with each other, with itself, right? And how residents kind of group themselves.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Chris before we go to public comment?
I don't know, maybe this is a dumb question, but what if you, to me, it seems like you want to keep these neighborhoods whole,
right?
Not make a district line right in the middle of my neighborhood, right? But what if you have a district or a neighborhood that's a distinct important neighborhood, and yet it's really not big enough to be a district, and so you've got to go over here and get some other people,
right?
My question was going to be.
Well, no,
what are the problems of weighing all that? How do we make sure that we don't, split an existing neighborhood right in half? And, you guys are over across the streets over there, and my neighbor's voting over there because it has a different representative, and
I mean, I think one of the things that I've seen in a lot of cities is that neighborhoods usually incorporate the busy thoroughfares, and those are often like the dividing lines between neighborhoods, and often become the major dividing lines between districts, because people kind of they go to the same supermarkets, their kids go to the same schools, and they're often based on those kind of the neighborhood underlying neighborhood structures and kind of transportation ways. So I think it kind of works itself out, but I also think one of the keys with the community of interest testimony is people saying things like, if you need to group us with another neighborhood, please draw us in with this adjoining neighborhood and exclude us from this other neighborhood, right? They create those choices in their, yeah, in their comment, and then it makes it easier for us to draw those lines.
Yeah.
Because I think, there are those divisions within cities that can help be a guide.
Yeah, right. Rivers and highways and.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
right, Brian, do we have any public comment?
There is no public comment.
Okay. Any other discussion before we have an action or recommendation? Okay, well, I would recommend that we, as mentioned, we move with District R, and we have the paper maps available, and the interest maps, and of course the district maps.
Yeah,
so I think with the paper maps, we'd give you like two versions. One pre-census, right, where it'll just be neighborhoods, it'll be community of interest and neighborhoods on one side and streets, major streets on the other. And then once we get census data, we'll create a new set of maps where we'll add the populations in and then the ideal population for each district. And of course, a slightly different instruction on the map so that people can use them.
Okay. Great. And then did we discuss also the timeline for this? I believe you mentioned February or March. When will we need to have this available to the public?
So I think with Districter, we can have that up and running by, I think your next hearing is in September. So we should be able to have that up, no problem for that meeting, along with the paper maps. You could probably have those earlier, but by your next meeting, I don't think would be an issue.
I think Chris, on the schedule, we have some public meetings, workshop kind of things scheduled for this fall, right? Something before the census is out and then after. So And you had mentioned, I think, that this fall we could use District R for community of interest mapping, which might be, you know, one way to proceed and then evolve, you know, as we get into it, into drawing district lines later on, heading into, you know, the decisions the council is going to need to make in February or March on maps. So if that's possible, that would be great, that we can tie the release, you know, and getting information out to the public about District R in conjunction with or ahead of some of the workshops we'll be talking about.
Yeah, that would be very doable.
So do you have everything you need, Dave, for item number 6?
I do, thank you.
Okay, so item number 7 is to schedule our next meeting. This is the second Tuesday of the month. So the next one would be August 10th. I unfortunately will be out of town.
Okay, so what's another day?
So August 17th, we can keep it on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. would work for me.
Okay. Is that good for staff?
We do have the Racial Equity and Social Justice Committee scheduled for 5:30. I know those often have been canceled. So if staff can, I don't know if we want to have a full afternoon of committee meetings, but I'd be open to it.
Okay. Well, I think we can schedule it for the 17th then.
Okay. Okay. So I think we can adjourn if there's nothing else.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.